talking with James Cridland. We are at Radio Days North America. It is the first outing of Radio Days on the North American continent. You come all the way, of course, from Australia.
Yes.
And how are you finding the experience so far?
Good day. I'm finding it smoking here. It's a good place. So I was here this time last year as part of Canadian Music Week, the previous radio conference that was here. Such a difference, night and day, now that it's Radio Days North America. They've been working with the Radio Days Europe team to bring a bit of their know-how into here. And just the amount of interesting ideas, interesting people speaking here has been really good.
Well, you were the kind of kickoff point for day two this morning. Tell us what your presentation was about.
So I was talking an awful lot about, obviously I'm writing a lot about podcasting in the Pod News daily newsletter. And so I was talking about the tools that podcasting is using that we can basically steal and use for radio. So everything from transcripts to tools that will clean up your audio and all of that kind of stuff, and sharing that with the audience, which was fun.
I was just saying before we started our recorded conversation that I've found your presentation rather inspirational. It reminded me I'm actually a podcaster. And
yes.
Now, I'd be interested to know, I mean, some of your tips and your tools were quite innovative from where I'm at technically.
Right.
How normal is it? You were talking about software that records at both ends of a remote conversation.
Yeah.
How normal is that these days? Or is that still just coming in?
That's relatively normal in quite a lot of podcasting. So those tools, they might be called Riverside, it might be called Squadcast. Those sorts of tools work very well, you know, in terms of just getting a better audio quality rather than using Zoom or Skype or something, which always have to rely on the internet being absolutely perfect in between you and the other person. Using something that records at their end and then sends you the file at the end of the interview works in a much better, much nicer way. So yeah, it's works in a nice way.
You mentioned a few options there. Which is the one that you prefer?
I use one called Riverside, which is, I think it's an Israeli company, but it's a fantastic tool. But there's Squadcast, there's Zencaster, there's various other of these tools. Radio Today listeners will, of course, know about CleanFeed, and CleanFeed is excellent, but CleanFeed is live through the internet, and so therefore, if you have a glitch on your internet, then you can hear that. So CleanFeed's great for live radio, you know, conversations and stuff like that, of course. But these remote recording tools are better for doing a recorded interview.
The other thing that I really kind of picked up on in your presentation was the idea of cleaning up recordings. Now, it's happened to us all, isn't it? We can take the greatest precautions
yes.
of finding a nice quiet space, and then something happens, you know, a big noise, you know, microphones are dropped or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And you came up with a really good solution to that. I mean, at least there is software out there that provides a solution. Tell us more.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of software out there which will actually reconstruct the audio for you. So I once recorded an episode of a weekly podcast that I do, and I recorded it using the wrong microphone. It ended up using the laptop microphone, which, as you can guess, sounded a bit rubbish. And so actually putting it through, it's a tool by Adobe, who you'll know from, you know, Pro Tools and Audition and stuff like that. This particular tool is a free tool, which is at podcast.adobe.com, and it allows you to enhance the audio, and basically it takes away the room echo, it takes away background noise. I had Sam Sethi, my co-host for the Pod News Weekly Review, he ended up recording an interview in a very noisy pub, which I was delighted by, but actually sticking it through this particular tool, you could still tell it was a noisy pub. Of course you could tell it was a noisy pub, but actually sticking it through the tool made it much, much easier to understand what was going on. So lots of these tools, which of course people are using in terms of podcasting, but the radio industry possibly hasn't looked at them as being very serious tools, but actually they can be used absolutely, you know, really well for those as well.
Which is a nice lead-in to how important do you think that a radio station needs to have its own podcast? And I suppose a sort of follow-up thought to that is, where are the balances going forward between podcasting and linear live radio?
Well, I think when I'm doing talks about the future of radio, then I talk an awful lot about the fact that radio is now a very multi-platform place, and the UK being, you know, very, very much a leader in that. And I think what we've come out of is a world where we have taken radio shows and then we've given some intern the job of cutting up that radio show and making a podcast out of it, or a reheated radio show, as I call them. And those are fine. But actually, audiences these days, I think, want a little bit more. And I think we need to completely rethink how we make radio to focus on making great pieces of on-demand content, which we then also air on the radio in a live environment. So instead of having someone in doing a live interview, why not pre-record that interview, make that interview sound, you know, polish that interview, edit it, make it sound as good as you possibly can, then air it on the air, because of course you're going to end up doing that, but then you've got a great piece of content which you can use for on-demand as well as for live radio. But that's a complete change to the way that we have produced radio in the past. And I think I upset people sometimes by saying that live radio is lazy radio. But to a degree, it kind of is, isn't it? We do a three-hour-long show. We ferry people in and out. You know, the Today program, when was the last time you heard that last interview at 5 to 9 actually finish on time without them cutting off at least one or two of the people there? So it's all of that kind of stuff where if we were thinking about producing radio in a different way, perhaps that might be where the future of radio is going.
Kerry Jones has created an interesting model in the UK with Alfred.
Yeah.
It's running on a traditional FM community radio license, but he's turned it really totally into the podcast. I think that, I'm not sure if he's still doing this, but I think at one point the podcast was just being sort of regurgitated on FM. So he's almost got rid of the idea of a local radio station broadcasting live 24/7 in the usual way, and it's all about the podcast, which I guess he offers then for the local community of Shaftesbury.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think, you know, Kerry is doing a fascinating job, and I'm fascinated at seeing how Alfred is working. But yeah, you know, I think one of the things that Kerry has understood is that his audience is listening to other radio stations as well. And they will dip into 107.3 to get the latest news from Shaftesbury, which is an area of the UK that frankly isn't covered by any other radio station properly in their editorial, you know, area. And then once they've finished getting their news update, they'll hop back to whether it's Radio 2 or whether it's, you know, Greatest Hits Radio or Heart or whatever it might end up being. And I think Kerry completely gets that. And that's a fascinating model. And you can also have a look at Shine Radio in Petersfield as another example of a very small community radio station that, you know, I mean, I love some of the things that I've seen in Shine Radio's applications for various things, where they say, we don't have studios because Petersfield is our studio. And I just, you know, love that. It's, again, a really different way of making live radio, of making radio, and it works really well, I think.
I mean, in the UK, and I'm sure this is reflected across the world, you know, the big resource stations, the big commercials, the LBCs, you know, putting a lot into podcasts, and individual shows are very much putting out their post-live great clips, which then pop up on our feeds. And I think, what would you advise a small and possibly low-resourced community radio station to be doing if they're not podcasting at the moment to kind of increase their reach into the communities that they're serving?
I mean, look, you know, at the end of the day, if you're making great audio, that audio deserves to be heard. And whether that is being heard on the FM dial, hopefully not the AM dial, but certainly on the FM dial and in other places as well, that's great. But also, I would suggest making sure that your audio is available in as many other formats as possible. And on demand, of course, makes a bunch of sense. There might be a good reason why someone can't hear the great interview that you put out at 3:30 in the afternoon on a Friday because they weren't listening to the radio at that time. But making that available on demand, whether that's on demand on their website, as a podcast, in, you know, rerunning that interview over the weekend, it astonishes me how many radio stations broadcast something once and then think that they can't touch it again because, oh no, it's already been on the air.
Yeah.
You know, all of that kind of stuff is, I think, really fundamental fundamental to where the future of radio is going. Getting the best value out of the very expensive content that we make, making sure that that needs to go to as many people as possible. And there are tools out there. OmniStudio runs one which allows you to automatically record your radio station's output and turn that into a podcast automatically. So there's great ways of doing that if you don't want to spend time, you know, working on a separate podcast, but similarly there are other ways of thinking about how you make your shows.
So is it important to create a podcast more than just an on-demand service where you might put an hour's chunk of radio up there and say, look, there was a great interview at 20 past one or whatever? But what I think we're talking about here is kind of using that content to produce something quite specific, which is going to increase your audience reach and draw listeners into what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you can look at podcasting as being marketing for your radio station. You can look at podcasting as being a separate way of bringing in sponsors and advertisers that perhaps isn't as regulated as your Ofcom, you know, output is. So you can have a look at all of these different ways. But I think podcasting is just another way of reaching your audience. And if you're a commercial radio station, connecting your audience with your advertisers, which is what commercial radio is ultimately there to do. So I think, you know, it's just another platform. And I think thinking of it as just another platform is really helpful. But I do think that it's a benefit if you think about how you make your radio the best way of combining on-demand with live radio and getting the most out of the great content that you put together. You know, it's a really important thing.
Well, one final thought, James. You are a very well-known radio professional, been around in the industry for a very long time, and you really know what you're doing. That was quite obvious just hearing you talk now, of course, but also in your presentation. A question really from what I do for a living, which is run the charity Sound Vision, where we're using podcast making or making audio as a route to building transferable skills for people who may have educational difficulties, emotional difficulties, or you know, trying to build opportunities for people with not great backgrounds. You know, what do you think of that as an ethos? In other words, learning the skills to make podcasts for wider benefit to progress in life rather than be solely for making content, you know, for a radio listenership or an audio listenership.
So that's a great question. And I think, so I used to run, you know, as you know, I used to run with Matt Deegan a radio conference called Next Radio. And one year, it was, I think, the first year of the big consolidation that ended up killing that particular conference. But I think the first year of that big consolidation, yeah, exactly. We ended up having Lisa Kerr, and Lisa had worked for lots of different radio stations for a long, long time. And her talk was about the things that you have learnt in radio, in producing great audio, that can be transferable to other businesses and other things outside of radio. And it turns out that there are so many opportunities that we have in just, you know, when you understand how to get an idea out in terms of audio, the best way of communicating an idea. Well, that's, you've just done a sales job there. You know, you can do sales particularly well, thinking up the creativity that we have to think about every day as being an ex-radio DJ. You know, the creativity that you have to think about every single day, every single week, is again incredibly useful in any job. So I think, you know, making podcasts, understanding both the workflow of how you actually put something like that together, but all of the skills that you pick up along the way, is really useful for all manner of walks of life.
Great answer. Great question, I might add, but great answer. Do keep an eye on what we're doing at Sound Vision. It's very much a charity building capacity, and of course we will always be watching what you're up to all the way around the world, but based in Australia.
Indeed. Thank you.
Thank you, James, for talking to Radio Today.